Alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Act for Self-Protection Podcast. I am your host, Mike Williver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. This week is our end-of-the-year wrap-up special, Act of Self-Protection Extravaganza, featuring John Correa, our owner and founder, Stephanie Widener, our CEO, and Neil Widener, our CMO. In addition, we have three of our former guests coming back to give us some updates as to what's gone on since they've been on the show. I hope you guys enjoy this special episode. I hope you had a great holiday season. Happy New Year, and I'll see you next year. All right, gang, welcome to this year-end in review. We're going to talk about all things active self-protection. We have on the line with us our founder and CEO, John Correa. Our founder and owner, John Correa. President. He's not Dave Portnoy. Also our CEO, Steph Widener, and our CMO, Neil Widener. John, thanks for being here. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Glad to be here. Of course, just watching the podcast grow this year has been incredible. So happy to be here, man, and be a part of it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Stephanie, I wanted to ask you specifically, there's been a lot of growth in the channel over this past year. Obviously, that's because of me, but are there any other reasons why you've seen so much growth in the subscriber base?
You know, as we got to the end of the year here, I went and scrolled back through all the titles throughout 2022, and I was just reading them and just kind of caught up again in all the fascinating stories that are being told. And I think that's just really the key, telling people stories, what really happens, how they dealt with it, what they were thinking and doing, and what can we learn from it. I think that's so valuable, and I'm so appreciative of you taking the time to tell those stories, and also the people that are willing to come on and share what is often a very difficult part of their life with the hope of helping others.
Yeah, I was talking to someone recently about the main channel and the growth on it, and it really is amazing. You guys, the three of you, have built a culture and a business here, and a reputation for doing business the right way, not dealing with shady advertisers, not cutting any corners, and I think for that reason, it's going to continue to grow. Can we talk about the Act of Self-Protection app? Is that something we're talking about to the general public?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's coming. Exactly what it looks like, we're still in development with all of that, and what's going to be available as far as premium content and all of those things. I don't think we're ready to really discuss much of that, but there will be some pretty cool premium content that comes. It's going to be an app that's going to be available for your iPhone and Android, and then it's going to stream on a few streaming services here and there, like Hulu, Apple TV, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm really excited about that and excited to get that going. It's a lot more detailed than what I'm saying here, but there is a lot to come yet. It'll probably be after the first of the year before we're ready to launch much of this, but I'm really excited to see what the future of that turns into.
Yeah, I'm sure what you're dealing with as far as getting that all ready is a millionfold more difficult, but I can relate in as much as I said, hey, we should do a podcast. John and Steph are like, yeah, go ahead and let's do a podcast. And then I was like, how hard could it be? You record some voices, you throw it on the internet. And like I heard Jeremy Clarkson in the back of my head. How hard can it be? Very hard. That's how hard it can be.
Quite so hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we're excited. I know we're excited to have ability to connect directly to people, to not have to worry about, you know, the fickleness of social media companies and their particular policies in these cases. You know, we'll own the apps, we'll own the ability to connect with people in those environments who choose to connect with us. So, and it'll be a more direct connection. So I'm excited for that stuff, man. It's going to be a ton of work. And I know Stephanie and I have talked about this. Neil and I have talked about this. We're going, oh boy, do we have it in us to do this much more work? And I think we do. If we didn't, we wouldn't be doing it, but I'm excited to bring new content and new venues and new ways. And as soon as we can actually discuss that, the actual content pieces, I'll let everybody know.
That sounds great. So can we reassure our listeners and viewers that nothing is changing as far as the YouTube channel and the podcast? It's all staying the same, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So the current offerings that we have at Active Self-Protection are, you know, through YouTube, especially, you know, our Facebook page will still be there. The YouTube channel will still be there. It's still getting the same content it's always gotten. And our goal there is to make that even better. Hopefully people noticed we just, on our intros and stuff, just upgraded our camera equipment. And so we're working hard on that. That's going to come over and be part of Active Self-Protection Extra as well. And all that content will still be there. We're working hard to make sure that that content is there and better than ever. This will be like the next evolution of being able to interface with active self-protection.
It's very exciting. Yeah. And another announcement I can make now confidently is at some point in the new year, this podcast will be a video podcast. We're just ironing out the details. Part of the problem is some of our guests, they want to remain semi-anonymous. So we're trying to work on that, protecting their identity. But it's exciting. I can't wait to do it. It's going to be another learning curve. Like Neil was talking about, you think, oh, how hard could it be? Well, it's very hard. But we're discussing how to get that done as well. Who wants to talk about this past year's national conference? Show of hands. All right, Stephanie, it's all you. Talk to us about it. It was a great time. I was there. Neil was there. John was there.
It was a great year. I mean, it's always a great year. It's always a little bit different. It has, you know, its own personality or whatever's going to happen. This year was really special. We raised over $100,000 for abused and abandoned, neglected teens in the foster care system and those that are aging out of it with their Homes of Hope program as they stop being foster teens and becoming adults in need of support and assistance. So I'm thrilled to be part of that. We brought in some of the best trainers from across the country. We had students that were excited to learn, open to learn. I mean, if anybody needed anything, half the time it was students that were jumping up and trying to help make this conference a success and a reality. My son did an amazing job as our conference auctioneer. It was supposed to be a raffle, but often he turns it into an auction, which is yes. Sometimes unfortunate if you invested in raffle tickets to a high degree. But that's always fun. It's just a joy. We get to hear. It's really the only time each year that John gets to preach and share a message with us from the Bible. And I really enjoy all of that. We get to sing and worship together with all of us being in different places across the country. That's not something we get to do often. So it was just really special. We're already planning and ideas, things we want to change and do to continue to evolve and grow for next year. So you definitely, if you didn't make it this year, you definitely want to try to get there next year. And if you did, I'm sure you're already looking for the dates to open and sign up.
And I'm going to add a couple things there. First of all, I know we heard from Lisa that we just crossed the $120,000 raised bar in that, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
It's the only conference of its kind that I know. I mean, it's 100% a fundraiser. Literally, we don't touch a penny. It costs us money. You know, sponsors help cover the instructors' costs, but many of them don't even put in their receipts. They donate that to the camp as well, which is pretty incredible. We had some great first-time classes this year. We had low light for the very first time. We had long-range shooting, so long-range precision rifle for the very first time. We got to do some really fun stuff. Neil and I got to teach a little bit more extended version of our defensive private citizen shotgun class, which was super de-duper fun. And so we're looking forward to even more of that this coming year. And it is literally my favorite weekend of the year. Now I'll tell you, I head home sometime, you know, Monday and dragging my butt like a dead dog. And everybody does, right? But it's so worth it. And so join us if you can.
I feel like the Monday after the conference every year, you three should be put into a cryogenic chamber for rest for like 7 days, not to be disturbed, because you guys are smoked. That thing is over. I've seen it twice now, and it's very impressive. If you listen to this show with any regularity, you know I'm frequently plugging the national conference and encouraging our guests and listeners to look into that and consider getting out there for that. Another thing we talk about a lot is the active self-protection instructor cohort, which is now just a rousing success. Neil, do you want to, I know when people sign up for that, they're going to end up at some point in beautiful Sioux Falls, South Dakota for the in-person. What's going on with the instructor cohort?
Well, we're getting ready to start our sixth cohort here any day now. That's going to start up here pretty quick, and the in-person will be right after the first of the year in Sioux Falls. So you get to come to sunny Sioux Falls, South Dakota in the January-February timeframe. It's beautiful. It's bright, mostly because everything's covered with snow. But we have a pretty cool range that we work with over there that hosts us. You know, the really cool thing about the instructor certification, I think, it's something that John and Steph and I talked about for, 2, 3, 4 years before we really were able to get this thing launched and off the ground. And, and of course, like any new program, it's had hiccups along the way, but I think we're really getting it dialed in. We've got Kerry Dudenhofer and Chris Bean kind of running as the directors of the program. So the way the program works, it's a 6-month-long program. So this isn't a one and done, show up in South Dakota, shoot a couple of times, and we give you a certification. it's 6 months of work, and it really is work. You know, as I look at it, it's more of a distance learning type of program. So like an online, almost like a college course. There's several books that they have to read. There's some significant writing that has to be done. And, you know, and then there's a weekly meeting or weekly class that we have once a week where you meet, we discuss everything that we have learned and where we're at with all of this. You know, and it's interesting, and I know it sounds like a whole lot of work, but the interesting thing is the feedback that we get from people is words like life changing and stuff like that. Is, you know, it's a complete attitude shift. That, you know, to be an instructor of adults is a little bit different than being a teacher, you know, in a school of kids or anything along those lines. So we really talk a lot about, you know, the adult learning process and that kind of thing, and spend some real time getting, you know, digging into some of that stuff and how we transfer knowledge to adults. And the instructors really love it. You know, they have to shoot to get in, and that's really the shooting of it. And we do some shooting where everybody's here in South Dakota just to kind of ensure and check that to make sure that, you know, this is the right thing for you. But, you know, if you can't shoot, you know, to get in, you're not going to get in. We have a pretty lengthy process to even get into this. And it's, you know, I so far it's been very special. So far, everybody that has graduated this has had, you know, just great things to say about it. They all want to stay involved. You know, the weekly meetings continue for these guys. Now we don't attend after the 6 months just because we, you know, we don't always have time for that. But that's the one thing that I see over and over is that when the cohort graduates and finishes, they want to stay connected. And now there's some networking that's been done, and there's some people to contact when you need some help or just need something to run by somebody, or you got a student in XYZ area. You know, so it's, I think we're, you know, our goal is to change the, you know, the outlook in the industry to some degree. And I think that we're having some success at that.
You may not realize this, you three, because you haven't been students in this class, but really the biggest side effect of the culture you've built around that instructor cohort is you are, as soon as you're done with this class, you're going to have a network, built-in network of people that amazing instructors all over the country. So if you're taking a class, you know, if you're in San Diego and your class is in Kansas City, you're probably going to know someone around there or close that can help you guest instruct, help you build curriculum. It's really amazing. And the other thing I wanted to point out, Neil, you said teaching adults is different than teaching a bunch of first graders. That's absolutely true. What I got out of it was, coming from a law enforcement or a military background, going to now teach non-law enforcement, non-military people, frequently we see it's problematic because they're acting like they're still teaching cops and they're not. And I think this is a great bridge from those two, from one world to the other, as far as teaching cops, like ex-cops like me. Hey, there's stuff you don't know. There's a lot of stuff you don't know about teaching non-cops, not just your attitude or your demeanor, but the way you approach it, the way you approach adult learning, all that sort of thing. Our time is up, folks. Don't forget to stick around. We have a bunch more blasts from the past guests that have been on the show before that are going to check back in with us and give us some updates, not the least of which is Chris Shin, who was, I think, wrongfully arrested recently. So we'll talk to him and many others. John, Steph, Neil, I love you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
I appreciate it.
All right. On the line with us now, my old friend. Well, she's not old. We've been friends for a long time. Lisa Ludwig. Lisa Ludwig is out of the New York, Long Island area. She is the president of the Long Island Women's Pistol Club, or does it have a different name now? Pistol and
Firearm
and
Club. Long Island Women's Firearm Club.
And you guys have like drum mag AK-47s and all sorts of stuff there.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, I don't think so. So we're here to talk about two things. Lisa was on our show a while back. She's one of the first guests, actually, on a compilation show of women in their journey into self-defense and why they started doing what they're doing. And all the women on that show ended up becoming instructors to share the love and help other people, sometimes just women, sometimes everybody, to help defend themselves. So, Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Mike, for having me yet again. I really, really appreciate this. This is awesome.
Absolutely. So real quick, before we get this out of the way right off the bat, in case I forget it later, how does one get a hold of you in the New York area for training?
Sure. So I am the president of She Trains You. So it's shetrainsyou.com, or you can email me at shetrainsyou, and that's Y-O-U, at outlook.com. And my phone number is 516-749-8650. There you go.
So if you're in the greater New York City area, any of the boroughs, you can reach out to Lisa for some training. So let's get the ugly part out of the way first. post-Bruin, in a post-Bruin world, it seems like the state of New York is trying its best to prevent law-abiding people from defending themselves with legal firearms. So give us a quick overview of kind of what's going on up there. People not in the state might not know about. You talked about a training issue for starters. What's going on with that?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So you have to be an NRA instructor currently to teach this class. And we've been doing great. You know, I've certified quite so many people so far, and it's been a nice ride. What happened recently, there was a senator that signed something trying to sign something into effect, which will remove the NRA from letting us teach this class and putting it in the responsibility in the DCJS LAP, which is the Department of Criminal Justice Services. So it's a little frustrating, and we don't really know what's going on. It's like we were good, but now we're not good enough. And, you know, it's kind of like a gray area. It's frustrating. People here are nervous, and I don't blame them. We've never carried here ever in our lives. So this is like momentous for us to actually have people being able to have a carry, you know, insignia even on their card. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like almost having the Holy Grail here. It's like, or a lotto ticket. I mean, you know, to see people have that, it's like, it's amazing. And it's beautiful to see that, you know, the certificate that I gave them made that happen.
That's amazing.
So for them to take that away and for them to kind of call us extremists, I don't want to like get into this too much, but they basically call us extremists. And, you know, I'm training an 83-year-old. I really don't feel she's an extremist. I have a 73-year-old woman, grandmother, you know, not an extremist.
Right.
I have a mother of four, you know, who's 40 years old, not an extremist. I don't understand where they're getting this from. So it's sad because we're really what we are preaching. If you really want to get to the heart of the NRA, we're teaching safety and we're teaching people to be safe with their firearms. What is wrong with that? This is like giving a car to somebody and saying, go down the block and get me milk and you don't know how to drive.
Right. Yeah, that's not a bad analogy at all. I got to say, it seems to me that if they're trying to take away the ability of private citizens trained by the NRA or whomever to teach these classes and giving it to the government, if they're already trying to stymie anyone from carrying a legal firearm with a CCW, giving all the training rights to the government doesn't sound like the best course of action. It just seems obvious to me that that's what they're doing 100%. And why they're doing
it. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to hinder our right from carrying. They're going to slow down the process. They're going to make it as hard as possible. They're going to make the instructors like only, it's only going to be like 8 of them now compared to like hundreds of us, right? And they're going to be inundated and therefore they're going to raise their prices because it's just going to be a downward spiral. It's terrible. And it's going to price people out.
And you sign up for that CCW class. You're like, yeah, we're scheduled out to September of 2037. So just stand by for that. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And then I guess also once they were forced by the Supreme Court decision to allow people to carry concealed firearms, they're also putting up sort of a roadblock in the form of, well, you can carry, but basically down the sidewalk is about it because we're trying to make every single business, house of worship, a prohibited place or a sensitive place or whatever. Talk to us about that really quick.
It's literally everywhere. And you're right. The only place that you're allowed to carry right now is if you see a sign in the window clearly and conspicuously labeled that you are a New York State concealed carrier, you're allowed to go into that business. But otherwise, if you don't see a sign or it's a no sign or a red sign, it means no. So a lot of people had the assumption of if there's no sign, then, well, we get to go in there. No, it means no, unfortunately.
Yeah, hopefully someone is going to litigate that. That sounds severely unconstitutional to me, but we'll see if the NRA or someone else takes up that mantle. So let's talk about you, Lisa, one of my favorite topics, Lisa Ludwig. What is going on with your business? Since you were on last, you were already established, but talk to us about growth, about kind of what's going on with you and the interest you're seeing from the public in services like yours.
Yeah, I definitely blew up, I have to say. I went from like, you know, I was training. I'm a full-time instructor. I don't do anything else. And, you know, I was training. I was making a living for myself. But, you know, ever since the CCW thing came in light, it's been like nonstop. Mm. And I mean, it's good. Like you said before, being busy is a blessing. Mm. You know, it keeps me on Facebook. It keeps me, you know, on the safe and narrow. And that's okay. So it's been an incredible journey. you know, just I can't even say more than I'm blessed to do what I do. And when you know you're doing the right thing, it's a passion, is when you don't look at the clock and you just consistently just want to work and help people. And that's how I feel. I've blown up so much because I'm an average person. I'm not military. I am not police. And my competition is near me, like in my local area. Mm-hmm. And I think when people call me, they're like, oh my God, you're like a breath of fresh air, because these people are scaring me, like legit scaring. Like they're all like tactiteds, and they don't understand that's scaring the local community. We're, like we said before, this is not like a generational place where we grew up with guns. This, you're just getting the right to carry. So just think how people's minds are like, no against guns. Then all of a sudden now they're flipping script when they're seeing that the police ain't coming. Yeah. And you're your own hero. And if you're not present in your story, then you're going to have some serious problems. So that's kind of what happened. They saw me in them, and I speak to them the way I want to be trained because I am them. It's kind of funny. I had like the Glock guy, he might be listening to this, but I had the Glock guy come down. He knows this because I told him. He was doing one of our trainings. We were doing like a Glock day. Mm-hmm. And he was speaking so far over my girls' heads, even over my head, honestly, to be really honest, that I was like, okay. You know, like we kind of just like rolled with it. So at the end, he asked like critique. And I said, you know, listen, I love you. And I'm so appreciative of what you did for us. Mm-hmm. But I said, we really didn't understand like half of the stuff you said. So he was like, oh my God, thank you for telling me. I didn't even realize when I get into guns, I'm all like military and right. And he doesn't understand that we've never, you know, broke down a compound with five of our buddies breaching doors. You know, we're in our house with our dog. It's different.
It's one of those things. So, I was talking to John Stephanie earlier about this very thing. The Active Self Protection Instructor Cohort Certification is such a great place. And that's one of the reasons I'd love to see maybe one cater towards people who are coming out of the law enforcement and military community who want to be tactical instructors, firearms instructors for just everyday people. Because it wasn't until I took that course that I realized, oh, wait a second, like, you know, there's so much I don't know about teaching non-cops, non-military people. And there's problems I didn't know I had that course identified for me. We talked about that, I think, during the class as well. Lisa, mm-hmm. That is our time. It is always a pleasure to see you. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Give me the website one more time.
It is shetrainsyou.com.
Folks, Lisa Ludwig. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, on the line with us now, our good friend Mark, last name redacted, from Australia, not New Zealand, Australia. He is from, is it Coffs Harbour?
Coffs Harbour. Yeah, that's one. You've got it.
All right, perfect. Okay. And if you remember, he was on the Active Self Protection Podcast. His episode aired back on November 11th, 2022, and we discussed an attempted carjacking incident. And one of the overriding themes of that talk was that people in Australia are basically defenseless in the face of criminal activity. They can't even carry so much as pepper spray, never mind a firearm or something more stout than pepper spray. So in the interim, Mark went and had a talk with a government official, as he said he would do in the podcast. So what happened with that, Mark? Who did you talk to and what went down?
Thanks, Mike. So I had a chat with a local MP who is a member of parliament. They're like a local representative. I don't know what the equivalent is in the States.
Yeah, it would be a congressional representative here. Yeah, so they're your representative to the national or the federal government, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah. So I had a meeting with the gentleman about 3.5 weeks ago. You know, I had a face to face sit down meeting with him. We talked for about half an hour. Or, you know, perhaps a little bit more, which was good. I think he's a really, really busy guy. We started off, he had a basic idea of what had happened. I expressed my concerns about not being able to carry anything for the self-defense. I was going to mention with him tasers as well as pepper spray, but I've noticed speaking with people that I know, pepper spray is one thing, but they seem to react a bit differently to tasers. I think they think it's a bit more, you know, firearm-like. So I only discussed pepper spray with him to begin with. He was fairly receptive. I think he's a good guy, but also a career politician.
Right.
He didn't want to give any, you know, specific answer in terms of what his opinion was. Even having the discussion with me, he sort of weighed the pros and cons. He said, look, you know, I guess it's good in this way because you can defend yourself and it's a non-lethal means of defense. But he kept a few times referred to pepper spray as being an escalation in situations. And I said, look, I guess in situations where people misuse it, you know, if it's road rage and it's a verbal altercation and someone decides to pepper spray, I can see what you're saying, but we're not discussing that today. We're talking about, you know, being threatened with a deadly weapon and having nothing to defend yourself. So he was good in that regard. I made a couple of points that that I thought were really good. So recently where I work, we had fire training. So we do fire drills. We learn to use the fire extinguishers and that kind of thing. The gentleman who ran that is a firefighter, and his overarching theme through the training was that it takes them about 15 minutes to get to a fire in a small, you know, reasonably small town like Coffs Harbour. And he said, in that first 15 minutes, you're the first responder because there won't be anyone else. So I put the argument forth to my MP that we're trained that that's the case with fire safety, that's the case with first aid, you know, in medical emergencies, that whoever's there is the first responder. Why is it not the case with personal defense and personal security? It's crazy to have the suggestion that don't do anything, just wait for the police to get there. So, you know, he was a reasonable guy. He was good to talk to.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, the analogy of it's one of the analogies frequently made in the United States as it relates to either having police officers, armed police officers in schools, or having certain select members of the staff in certain positions who are armed, discreetly armed with a firearm to protect students, because you know, it's going to take a minute or two or 10 or 12 or 15 for the police to show up. It's not their fault. The police would love to be everywhere at once, but they can't be. So the analogy being, we're willing to have fire drills and put in sprinkler systems and fire alarms and smoke detectors and fire extinguishers and teach our kids what to do if there's a fire. And they do some sort of training as it relates to active shooters, but we're not willing to take that step in many cases to arm school staff. So that's an interesting analogy. It's funny how that carries over. So additionally, I know you don't know much, but your the bad guy in your case was caught a couple of days after the incident. And you said he did go to court recently. What was that about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was a day or two after they caught him. He went to court on the 13th, and this is all, you know, public knowledge. I don't think, you know, I'm saying anything I shouldn't be saying.
No, probably not.
For something that's referred to as a committal hearing. So the prosecutor who is the public prosecutor, we have a Department of Public Prosecutions in Australia. They prosecute more serious cases. So they had the opportunity to put their evidence to the magistrate or the judge. And essentially he decides on the spot whether there's enough evidence to proceed to trial or whether the individual gets to go home. So I'm still waiting to hear back to get an answer on whether we can find out what happened. I'm not sure we can, but it's the process is fairly slow in getting information. So I would think that it would be pretty unlikely that he was let go, given that there's, you know, two witnesses, and I think he had a go at doing something to someone else that night as well. So hopefully, you know, I'm really hoping that something comes out of it in that regard. Another really quick point I wanted to make as well about the pepper spray and discussing that with my local member.
Mm-hmm.
Made the point to him as well that, you know, I'm not ashamed to bring this up, but I have a firearms license. I'm trusted with, you know, high-powered rifles, all sorts of things that I own, but I can't purchase a can of, you know, essentially chili sauce.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
That's actually an excellent point. So to be clear for our American listeners who might not have heard the original podcast, that doesn't mean he can carry a gun. That's almost unheard of, completely unheard of in Australia, but he can possess firearms, good or range, that sort of thing, and have them at home. And the idea that they would trust you with a semi-automatic magazine-fed rifle and not a can of Palm pepper spray is pretty ridiculous. So now listen, Palm is our sponsor. Now, I'm not trying to open the Australian market for them. I'm not being paid, wink, wink, at all. No, I'm kidding. Of course I'm not. But I'm sure Palm would love to have the business. So shout out to Palm. Mark, I appreciate you coming on initially. I appreciate you coming back to bring our audience up to date. I assume you will let me know when you hear something about that hearing, and I will pass that along to our listeners.
Absolutely. I'll keep in touch. And when I do get a response back from my federal member, I'll shoot you a line as well. He's made representations to the deputy premier, which is a state level guy, and the police minister as well. So the three questions that he put to them, just really quickly,
sure.
What exactly were the laws surrounding pepper spray? Is there a review pending of those laws anytime soon? And one specifically that I got him to put in there was, what is their justification for having it banned from civilian use?
Very good.
So we'll see how we go.
Mark, I thank you again. Have a happy new year, my friend.
Fantastic. You too, Mike. Cheers.
Hey, gang, check it out. We have an update from Chris Shin. He was on our show back on October 7th. His episode was entitled Poor Concealment Lands Good Dad in a Bad Spot, which, by the way, I wasn't sure what to call that episode, so I asked Stephanie, and she came up with that pretty catchy title. It was a very successful episode. It did really, really well. We got a lot of people writing to me and asking, hey, is somebody helping this guy out, that sort of thing. And so I did put him in touch with one person. We'll talk about that in a second. Chris Shin, thanks so much for coming back. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you all for having me back.
Absolutely. So can we just recap your story? So he had a – how old was your daughter at the time?
She's 6 years old still.
Okay.
She was 6 when it occurred.
6-year-old daughter. The school she attends had lost her on numerous occasions. Chris had numerous meetings with school staff trying to get this hammered out so it wouldn't happen again. And the last time it happened, he was waiting at the bus stop like a proud American, armed, legally concealing a firearm with a neighbor. When his daughter and the neighbor's child didn't get off the bus, they did what any parent would do. They hopped in the car. He hopped in his neighbor's car, down to the school they went. And let's just say Chris gave them the business about his – he expressed his displeasure with their inability to keep track of his small child. And he wasn't particularly shy about it. He let them know how he felt. And I can't say I blame him. This wasn't like it was the first time this had happened. Anyway, police are called for an unrelated reason. And one of the officers apparently didn't seem to like Chris's attitude too much. And when Chris's cover garment rode up a little bit, the officer saw he was armed and goes, ha ha, I have a reason to arrest this guy, and did a totally discretionary arrest. So he was in the criminal justice system at the time we talked the first time. So catch us up. What has happened since then, Chris?
Well, since then, I have learned a lot about Missouri state law when it comes to firearms in regards to school properties, school events, and all that stuff. As we discussed last time, there was a statute that I caught on to and hung on to. Mm-hmm. Now, for a while, we were very, very worried, my wife and I, that we weren't going to be able to get a lawyer and that we wouldn't have the finances. And we were very much facing, destitution as far as losing our home and stuff, because my job being put on a hold through suspension. And we did, which to everybody listening and anybody that may have extended any kind of help, thank you. We didn't require much more beyond just the support of knowing that other people, know we aren't out here trying to do anything bad. And any financial assistance we gained, thank you. We did not ultimately get a, big hoity-toity lawyer or anything, but we did get enough as far as donation to cover the minor charge. I think it's $375 for the public defender that was appointed to us. So we were able to get that covered, which is great. But when I brought up the Missouri statute in regards to transporting a child to and from school and legally carrying your firearm to my public defender, she didn't know about it, had no clue, looked into it, and she was like, oh my gosh, you're onto something here. And she, you know, we sat on it for a little bit. We wanted to wait and get discovery from the prosecutor so she could go over that and everything.
Sure.
And come to find out, the only thing that was ever brought up in the police report or the charge itself was that I just simply had a firearm on my person. They put into the police report that I was at the school searching for my child because I had believed the school misplaced her. So they kind of, the law enforcement officers that made the arrest when they did the report, they kind of helped me there because they established on a piece of paper for the courts in an official document that the reason I was there was for my kid to get her. When the prosecutor, and I told you, I believe in an email, he sent a plea deal of criminal trespassing, and that would be it. They would plea it down from a unlawful use of a weapon and bring it to a criminal trespassing as long as I let them destroy my firearm.
Okay.
And I told my lawyer, absolutely not. Because like I said, I've learned a lot about Missouri law.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know is that you cannot be criminally trespassed. You can be trespassed and then criminally trespassed if you go back.
Right. That's accurate.
But you cannot be criminally trespassed and convicted on a criminal trespassing charge if a pre-existing trespass wasn't there, if it didn't exist.
Yeah. So basically, for those who aren't familiar, if you are making a stink at the local convenience store and the owner asks you to leave and you don't leave and the police show up and the police ask you to leave, you got to leave. So what they're going to tell you is, hey, the owner doesn't want you back here. And if you come back, you can be arrested for trespassing. You're not trespassing the first time. So that's kind of what that's about. So they didn't have an existing trespass warning or order against him. So therefore, he wasn't trespassing. So why would he plead guilty to that? Why would you, Chris?
Exactly. And I told her, I said, you tell him absolutely not. And you send him the Missouri statute that I pulled up for you. And that was our response. And I believe she sent that out. I want to say it was either on a Wednesday or a Friday. It wasn't on Thanksgiving because obviously everybody's doing Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But that following Monday, he responded with a nolle prosequi, which means no prosecution.
Right.
He's chose to abandon the charges. Now, if he wanted to, if I really goofed up and did something similar, they could bring those charges back within a 3-year period.
Okay.
But that's not going to happen. That just, there's absolutely no possibility for that to happen. I'm not going back to any school with a firearm on my person ever again.
Yeah. That was actually my next question. Did you receive, or did your attorney receive what's called where I'm from, it's called a no pros letter, basically detailing it's a letter usually from the DA's office saying, okay, we're not going to prosecute this. However, this is in effect for however long, sort of a informal probation, like you said. So did you get that? And is that what it said?
No, it's absolutely nothing. And the reason why was because, and I think the reason it was, has something to do with his drastic, because you got to admit that's pretty drastic to go from a felony unlawful weapons charge to a criminal misdemeanor trespass. And that means to me that he knows he absolutely has no case, no crime committed there. He's trying to get me to be fearful and go ahead and accept that out of fear because I think I'm going to lose everything. But I did some reading and I decided I was going to stand on this hilltop and that I would not be moved and that he would have no choice but to drop it and give me my property back. And so they dropped it. I've been in contact with a gentleman at the evidence office to basically line out of time in the next couple of weeks to go down there and retrieve my property, which I don't know why it's going to take that long, but they've got a lot of stuff, he said, going on, and sometimes it takes a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But
well, welcome to dealing with the government, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Slow to do anything. Quick to point fingers.
Absolutely. So I would ask my attorney if I were you, I would ask if there is a hard copy of a letter from them outlining the terms of the non-prosecution, because there might be other details you're unaware of. So I would definitely ask to get a copy of that.
My wife just got up randomly and grabbed me this. This was the document that they did send to us. Which, okay,
so he's holding just up a very brief document. If you can't see this, but it's a very brief document.
It's just a sentence. It just says notice of nolle prosequi. And everything that I've been able to find on nolle prosequi is just, it's not actually a dismissal. It's just an abandonment. Like, they're like, nothing's here, so let's go find something else. And the, you know, then they just leave it alone, I guess.
But
as far as I know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but you understand that your understanding is that for 3 years they could reintroduce this charge if for whatever reason you were arrested for something else. I mean, spitting on the sidewalk or DUI or anything.
Well, that's where it can be kind of hazy, because they can and they can't. It has to be, from what this is from what I've been reading, and maybe I've interpreted it incorrectly, but from what I've been reading, it would have to be another gun charge.
Okay.
In order for that, or some kind of violent crime that could be considered, okay, so this guy is really a danger to society, and so we should go ahead and do this. But I don't see any reason. My lawyer agreed as well, that they would bring it back, because there's so little of anything to do with anything. You can't get, she said, you could, if this went into trial and had a jury of my peers, it wouldn't go anywhere. They wouldn't be willing to prosecute.
All right.
So, I think my family and I made it through this storm. And I'm hoping that with the retrieval of my personal property and, you know, my secondary defensive weapon, we will find this whole fiasco behind us.
Folks, this is what I say this all the time on the podcast, and I say it all the time on the main channel. If you're a private citizen and you carry a firearm, it is really important, as Chris can now testify. It is really important. If you can afford it, you need to get firearms legal protection or some other version of that. And Chris looks like he has something he wants to say. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because when we were emailing the other day and you had asked that question, you know, for the last few years, I've been seeing that on like YouTube during the ads or something, or you all will sometimes put them as an ad at the beginning of the videos and stuff. And I always used to kind of, as stupid as it may sound, snicker at the idea, like, who needs that? Me.
Yeah.
I need that. I need that. And I do think it's definitely a necessary thing for anybody that's, I believe this now, for anybody that's going to carry a firearm, because you never know. It could be the dumbest thing on earth that gets you in trouble.
Like what happened to you, for example.
Yes. Or it could be a defensive engagement where you protected yourself and loved ones, that could be misconstrued as something other.
Yeah, we had another guest on out of Phoenix, Benjamin Bacchus, a while back. I don't have the date in front of me when that show aired, but he was on the main channel and on the podcast. It was still the most successful listened to episode of the podcast ever. Benjamin had a former neighbor who was a ex-con, and he was trying to help him out and befriend him. And it worked out for a while. Then the ex-neighbor decided, I'm going to go off my meds, basically, and go back to being a knucklehead, and was stalking our guest and threatening him. And it turned out one morning, this guy showed up out front of his house. Well, Benjamin had set up cameras covering pretty much the whole front of his place. And this guy gets out to assault him, and Benjamin draws his firearm, his defensive firearm. And eventually it looks very much like the guy went to grab it from him, took his shirt off, was posturing, say, I'm going to take that from you, yada, yada. So long story short, he spent $10,000 before anything else happened. He was never even arrested. But just to retain a good attorney who used to work for the prosecution in Maricopa County, just to start proceedings cost him $10,000. So if you think firearms legal protection is unaffordable, it might not be in your budget right now, but it's something you got to think about, because what you really can't afford is to get into a situation where you have a even remotely questionable defensive gun use and you have no legal protection. That should be your first phone call.
I agree. And I think I know which one you're talking about. That was in Black and White, correct?
Yeah.
And Benjamin was moving backwards away from the guy as he reached forward. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman that was attacking him, from what I remember, he was kind of a pudgier gentleman. And he took the shirt off as a kind of a threatening engage, like, oh, we're going to do it now.
Right.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was.
And that cost that man $10,000 for something that, yes, he clearly defended himself and was not in the wrong, but that still cost $10,000.
Yeah, my point is, you might find yourself in a position like that where you're like, man, am I on solid legal ground? I don't really know. I'm not 100% sure. Or you might find yourself in a position like our friend Chris here, who did quite literally nothing wrong, broke no laws, as far as anyone can tell, and still got put into that legal system. So having that up front, having that be your first phone call once everyone's safe and secure to FLP is highly recommended. They will tell you what to say or what not to say. What they're probably going to say is don't say anything, by the way. Chris, I got to run. This is our first bonus episode. Very exciting to have you back, and I'm sure our listeners will be super happy to hear this news. And I appreciate you coming on the first time and especially the second time. So good to see you again, my friend.
It's good to see you as well, and thank you for having me again.
My pleasure. All right, gang, it is that time again for the Gutowski Files featuring Stephen Gutowski. He is the founder of TheReload.com and the host of the weekly Reload podcast. And in case I get tied up later and tongue-tied and forget, please do me a favor, go over to TheReload.com, TheReload.com, all one word, and give them a look. Consider getting a membership over there. Stephen relies on your membership dollars to fund his important work. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
How was your holiday?
It was good. We had a great Christmas. We have a new puppy. Rocco's not with us today. I think his public will demand that once we go video, he be on the show every week. But until then, he is currently napping. Him and the other dog has been fighting, well, play fighting all morning. So he's getting jumped into the crew, as it were, over here. Over here, Retro Williver. So in keeping with the theme of this show, as you know, Stephen, we had John Neal and Stefan to talk about active self-protection and what's been going on for the last year. And then we had some of our former guests come on to talk about some updates with their story. So in that vein, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what's going on over at The Reload, any kind of growth you've had and where you see yourselves going in 2023, and some exciting news about, you know, as we talked about before, about you becoming a contributor on CNN.
Yeah, certainly this year has been really good for The Reload in terms of subscribership growth. I think we've doubled our number of our free subscribers, and we done the same for paid subscribers.
Nice.
So you know, it's been a good year of breaking stories that I think has led people to realize the value of the publication, and a lot more people are now supporting us and our work, and that's going to give us a lot of flexibility moving into the new year, where hopefully we can, you know, start expanding personnel a little bit. You know, that's my goal for this publication, is to make it into a larger operation where we can cover more stories and we can bring people more news about firearms across the country, about, you know, politics, policy, culture, you know, just everything going on with guns in America. And, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to the most, is figuring out how best to position, you know, the publication for that kind of expansion. Because, you know, this is a small business, right? You know, we're not trying to be the next $10 billion company or whatever. We're trying to build a sustainable small business in a way that is going to ensure we can, you know, survive on into the future for many years and continue to provide this kind of reporting that I think you still can't really get anywhere else. You know, there's a lot of great publications out there that cover politics or guns, but I still think we're unique among them in a number of ways. And that's what I hope to capitalize on, the progress we've made to this point. And, you know, that's what I think we're going to focus on in 2023.
You know, I kind of had a vision of this thing just growing and growing to the point where you're like in a corner office with a fedora, with a press pass sticking out of it, chomping on a cigar, yelling at Jake to get into your office right now. That's not in the cards, I guess, like a Jimmy Olsen editor kind of a situation. But that's fine if you want to stay a small business. I understand. Of course, I'm kidding. what I love
the next Daily Planet.
Exactly. What I love is that you guys are kind of not, I wouldn't call it boutique, but kind of niche, and it's a good niche to be in, because I don't know if there's anyone else in this particular space. Kind of like the Actor Self-Protection Podcast is a very specific thing that covers a very specific target. You guys focus on firearms and Second Amendment stuff, keeping the NRA's feet to the fire, holding politicians accountable for things they say they're going to do, and breaking a lot, as you said, breaking a lot of stories that I'm not hearing anywhere else. I pray that your business flourishes and stays in that lane, because I think with you, as you said, moving forward, we don't want it to get so big that it's unmanageable. I like where it's at, although I'd like to see it grow enough to where you can kind of be an overseer and a director rather than having to write half the stories yourself. You know what I mean? Is that something you're planning on doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think focus is a great word to use for what we're doing. We have a focus. We stay on topic. We stay on our beat. And that's what I want to see us continue to do. And, you know, I do want to grow, of course, into a larger publication. I think there's a danger in trying to grow super fast. You've sort of seen this actually with a lot of the big tech companies, a lot of the big flashy companies that have, you know, tens of billions of dollars valuations,
right,
don't make any actual money. You know, they can grow really fast around just by building up hype, and then that all comes crashing down when there isn't, you know, interest rates at 0%,
right,
and money's harder to actually get. So that's what I don't want to have happen to the not that we're on the cusp of being a $10 billion company, but I just want to grow sustainably is my point on that. And yeah, I do want to have, you know, I think there is space in this beat for a dozen or more reporters down the line and a number of editors. And, you know, I think we could do events. We could do all sorts of different membership levels with different features. You know, there's a lot that I think we can do. And the Reload is really still just at a proof of concept stage right now. You know, we're operating, we're profitable, we're making a difference in news reporting, we're breaking stories, which is what drives, I think, the profitability. That's what people come for. You know, we're not focused on aggregating stories or giving our opinion. There's a lot of people who do that very well already. We're focused on original reporting, and that's our bread and butter. That's where we excel, and that's what I want to continue to do and grow down the line. Right now, we're at the early stages of that. And I think, you know, just like Active Self-Protection is growing and branching out into new things that are related to what you're already doing,
right?
You're sort of doubling down on the areas that make sense for you to go into. That's what I want to do with the Reload moving forward. You know, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for us. And that's where my priorities are, you know, trying to bring in more reporters who can do that sort of work, that to break stories that no one else has, to inform people in ways that they aren't going to find anywhere else, to be sober and serious about how they approach the issue, to be a resource for all sorts of different people out there. We try to report the news in a way that is going to be digestible for everybody, that's not going to be alienating to people who don't understand the topic very well or have different political viewpoints out there. We want everyone to be able to read the Reload and to have a better understanding of what's going on with guns in America when they leave the site.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of ways to accomplish that.
Yeah. I think sometimes we get into our bubble, into our echo chamber, and we start to otherize people and alienate people who don't agree with us 100% and 100% of our political viewpoints. And that's a dangerous thing that's kind of enveloped the country. And what I love about the Reload, I love about our talks, I love about John and Stephen Neal and Active Self-Protection, is we all kind of have a very similar viewpoint, which is that self-defense, the Second Amendment, is for everyone. It is for everyone from every political viewpoint, and then every other category of individual that you can imagine. And part of what we tried to stress in our talks, even in my opinion, is that we stay as apolitical as we can. Sometimes we stray into it because we have to, because the Second Amendment is inherently a political issue. But I love the fact that we are able to put it this way. I think if somebody were to walk into the room and hear you and I talking, they would move closer and lean in and listen, regardless of their political viewpoint, regardless of their biases, because we're trying to be reasonable. I think that's at the heart of everything we do, is to be reasonable. And I love the fact that so many people are coming on to the comment section. We have comments in Spotify now, by the way. I see them first and I decide which ones get published. My policy, I'm going to publish all of them unless they're hateful or whatever. I'm just going to let all of them be seen. But a good 30% of those, at my behest, are mentioning the name of Gutowski or the Reload or whatever, because they're sticking around through the whole show and listening to the whole Reload segment at the end, which is a huge compliment, I think, that people are willing to invest an hour, lately sometimes 2 hours plus, to get to the end of the show to hear what you and I have to say about a particular topic, which I think is great.
Yeah, and I think that shows the value of this show and what you're doing. This itself is an expansion of active self-protection, right?
Yeah.
Started out with the analysis videos, and now we're moving into interviewing people who were in self-defense situations. And it really is riveting content. It's hard to stop listening to it, frankly, if that's something you're interested in. And, right. And you know, I think trying to appeal to everybody, or trying to write in a way that is not intentionally alienating anyone, doesn't mean, changing what the facts are,
right,
in any means, right? Yeah. It's not about pandering to some audience that might not listen to you otherwise. It's just about being accurate and being sober in the way you approach a story. That's my point of view on it, at least. We're certainly not going to remove inconvenient facts, or facts that some people might find inconvenient or what have you. Whether we're reporting on the NRA or Everytown or Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't matter. You know, whether it's the White House doing something, or whether it's Mitch McConnell in the Senate doing something,
or the California state legislature.
Sure. It's not about I'm not going to report this because a Republican won't like it, or a liberal won't like it. That's not the right way to go about it, right? You want to do it in a fair way, be able to present each side as they would want to be presented, give them a fair shake at their points of view, include them in the story whenever it's relevant. But at the same time, the first principle always has to be truth. The story has to be true. It has to be accurate. It has to be informative. And that's where we really come from. But it doesn't have to be intentionally tribalistic or antagonizing towards some group of people. That's not what the Reload is going to be about. And I don't think that's what the show is about either. Right. And so, that's the approach I want to carry on. And I think it's something that a lot of people will value moving forward. And that's been the case so far, right? Like, we're growing every month at the Reload in a sustainable way. You know, we haven't spent much money on advertising to try and bring in people. We're relying a lot on word of mouth, on earning people's eyeballs through breaking news
and trust
gets covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the approach we're going to continue with. And that's what I think is going to drive us to success ultimately. And so I'm really excited about the new year. You know, the CNN role has also gone well to this point. You know, it's still early there. It's only been a couple months since I started with them, but I've had a good experience thus far. I'm hoping to get more time on the network in the future. Hoping to broaden out the coverage there, so it's more than crime related stories or mass shooting related stories. There's so much more going on with guns in America, as we talk about here on the show every week. And I think that that's one blind spot of the majority of media out there, is, that when they think of guns, or when you talk about guns in, the Times or the Post or CBS or what have you, even Fox, a lot of times, a lot of these places, there's one story, which is mass shootings.
Yeah.
And there's just so much more happening with guns in America than that. And so, you know, that's what I'm hoping. You know, we bring that approach to the Reload, and I'm hoping to continue to bring that to CNN as well.
Nice. You know, I get a lot of comments on the main channel about the ATF and shooting dogs and the ATF trying to take all your guns. There's an analogy, a clunky analogy I'm going to try to make here, and that is I work with a lot of ATF agents over the years who were on task forces with me. And to a man and to a woman, they were not gun-grabbing, crazy-eyed people. In the same way that sometimes other three-letter agencies get a bad rap because people at their headquarters level who are inherently political animals, who were never line agents, who were never investigators, do things politically one way or the other that are untoward or unpleasant. ATF agents frequently get all lumped into one category because of the mission of the agency. And the people that I knew were pro Second Amendment and pro guns and loved the idea of every private citizen being able to arm themselves. Those are the people you want in those positions. As long as we have an ATF, as long as it exists, I want as many people like-minded as me in that agency as possible to sort of rein it in. In the same way, if you hate CNN and you hate, leftist politics and leftist, political reporting, yada, 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 I think the important thing is to have Stephen on that network providing some balance and giving a perspective, a sane, sober perspective, as he does at the Reload, of saying, no. Every gun story shouldn't be a mass shooting. Every gun story shouldn't be something that negative that happened with a gun. There's a ton of other stuff to talk about. And I've seen you on there, and I love the way that you bring a very level-headed approach to it. And I want you representing people like me to the rest of the country who otherwise would never talk to someone like me. We would never interact. They would cross a street to avoid me. So I love the idea that you are on there and they can see someone like Stephen presenting another side to the argument about guns. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And going back to your ATF point too, that's another area where we try to bring a fair approach as well. Like we've covered the ATF extensively and critically throughout the year, mm-hmm. especially in regards to the president's appointments of the new ATF director and his attempts to do that. And
yeah, we talked about that here as well.
We've talked about that a bunch on this show. And at the same time, I'm in contact with the ATF. I talk to the ATF, their press representatives. I talk to ATF sources to try and make sure that I'm fairly representing the agency's positions on these things as well. Again, not changing any facts. If there's something I can report, I'm going to report it. But giving them the opportunity to have their say, to defend themselves, to explain to the public why they did something a certain way. We've done that a lot with the president's executive orders on rule changes for 80% lowers and pistol braces, which mm-hmm. is something we're going to continue to cover into the new year. Same thing for the CDC with our recent reporting on them. We do our best to give the CDC a fair opportunity to defend themselves or to explain themselves. And same for the advocates who were involved, the gun control advocates who were involved in that story. Like, always reach out for comment to see what they want to, how they want to respond, what they would say, maybe, and issue corrections if we get something wrong is another important thing. For instance, just today, actually, it turned out that the CDC had prepared a statement for the Trace, which is the publication that had initially reported that there was a change to the language on the website. They, mm-hmm. We obviously had a lot of the details on how that change got made, but part of the emails that we got from them, from the CDC, included this statement that they had finalized to send to this reporter. And it turned out that they never actually sent that statement to the reporter. It's a bit odd on the CDC's part, but it's important to clarify this. It's not a big part of the story, right? It doesn't really change anything as far as the main interaction between the CDC and these advocates. But it's important to get that accurate because, yep. If somebody thinks that there was a statement sent to the Trace and they didn't publish it, they might question, why didn't you publish this? Well, it turns out they never even got the statement because the CDC never sent it to them. It's a minor point in the bigger story, but it's important to be accurate. And it's good to have those relationships where you can talk to the people. It doesn't mean that you change things to be inaccurate right. or leave out facts that they don't want reported or something along those. That would be wildly unethical, right? But it's important to make sure that you're hearing from all sides of a story. One, to keep, to make sure you don't make any mistakes when reporting on it, but two, to give them a fair opportunity to explain themselves or defend themselves or what have you. And so, you know, they don't always take that opportunity, but you have to present it. And that's, you know, that, that just goes back to the sort of principles we try to operate off of, the journalistic principles that we focus on when we're reporting these stories. But, and that's something we'll, we will always do as long as I'm involved, you know, with the Reload, which I own 100%. So we'll probably be involved for a very long time.
Yeah. You know, it's a kind of a shame. The things you just described, by the way, the journalistic principles and ethics, is just good journalism. They used to be considered just what you did as a journalist. And sadly, and now I'm editorializing here, so Stephen can plausibly deny everything I'm about to say. You know, that used to be considered just good journalism. I don't know if there was ever a time. We like to look back to Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite and early Dan Rather and say things were so fair and balanced back then. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I don't know. But what you're describing is just good journalism, not alienating people unnecessarily, keeping your options and your sources open. And folks, if you don't know, Stephen is well connected in the D.C. area. This is not his first rodeo. He's worked for several other publications before starting his own well-known ones. And Stephen, that is our time, sir. We will be back next week in the new year talking about gun-related stuff. If you are lamenting the lack of down-the-middle, sane, sober reporting, do me a favor. As I said at the beginning, go over to thereload.com and consider getting a membership. Stephen, happy new year. I'll see you next week.
Look forward to seeing you next week in the new year. Absolutely.